Welcome to Wrestling Inside the Ropes with James Stewart.
I'm the best. I'm the best in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day.
And Mike Sarge Riley.
I don't know if you realize it or not, but you're trespassing on private property. When you walk through here, through these ropes, you're in my yard. Bad things happen in my yard.
Wrestling Inside the Ropes.
It looks like there's a new WrestleMania match in the works. Can the Elite be all in on a new wrestling promotion? And are fighting champions a thing of the past? Each week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 98.5thesportshub.com and on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all of the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. All of our podcasts are also available on Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. Mike, how was Thanksgiving?
Oh, it was great, Jimmy. I am still recovering from my food coma, but here we are now, and had a lot of pumpkin pie and apple pie, but ready to rock and roll. How about yourself?
Had a delightful ham, some turkey, and all the sides that you can imagine. And I tried. Oh yeah, ham's a staple.
Really?
Yeah.
With Thanksgiving, huh?
Yep, absolutely. Okay. I'm not a huge turkey person. So give me some red meat, and I'm good to go.
So you could always go my mom's route too, because she's Italian, and have some meatballs for the turkey as well. Really good.
So that's a possibility going forward. But that's usually a Christmas thing.
There you go. Bring it on.
Christmas, Easter. Mike, one of the things that has been a constant fascination of mine since we started this podcast is what's happening at WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. And generally speaking, I think any type of rumor for a main event at WrestleMania is the lead story. And this ties into something I think you have mentioned in the past. And this is the possibility of Brock Lesnar taking on Seth Rollins. Here's what Dave Meltzer wrote in the Wrestling Observer newsletter. Quote, the next pay-per-view is TLC on December 16th from San Jose. Lesnar won't be on the show, as his next major show is the Royal Rumble, where he'll defend the Universal Championship against Braun Strowman, as things stand right now. Braun, of course, is going in for surgery. He's got bone chips, blah, blah, blah. While Vince McMahon has been in a shaking up plans mode, Lesnar right now is scheduled to face Seth Rollins at WrestleMania. Continuing from Meltzer, I haven't been directly told Lesnar is beating Strowman again, as that would make his third singles pay-per-view win over Strowman. However, Lesnar versus Rollins is scheduled to play off the Roman Reigns in some fashion illness and is scheduled to continue to be the storyline going forward. Now me, I feel like Seth Rollins has been deserving of the Universal Championship for a while. He has been carrying Raw for a long time now, and he should be somebody who beats Brock Lesnar for the Universal Championship. Or if it's not even for the Universal Championship, he deserves a win over Brock Lesnar. Mike, how do you feel about this? This is something you have mentioned in past episodes, Seth Rollins versus Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, and also I think it would make perfect sense, because there was Seth Rollins. It'll be 4 years when he cashed in at WrestleMania 31 to win the then WWE Championship, which was the only one around, and now he'll become Universal Champion at WrestleMania. So it only makes perfect sense to have him kind of go full circle after the ACL tear and to be that next guy there to become the champion. And, yeah, we've seen Dean Ambrose as the champ. We've obviously seen Roman Reigns as a champion. And, you know, if all goes well for the health recovery of Roman Reigns, it certainly makes sense. And I think it's what's best for business to have Seth Rollins as your champion for when Roman is healthy, and Dean Ambrose and those three guys to feud, as we've wanted to see it for a while, the Shield go at it for the Universal Championship. So that would be the great thing to move to the next chapter after WrestleMania. Seth Rollins over Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania 35.
Mike, you touched on Seth's history of WrestleMania a little bit, and it's really strong. If you look at his first WrestleMania, which was in New York. It was Dean Ambrose and Roman. They beat Kane and the New Age Outlaws in about 3 minutes. The next year in San Francisco, Seth had a fabulous match with Randy Orton and then cashed in during the Roman Reigns Brock Lesnar match to win the WWE Championship. That's a pinfall over Roman Reigns, which of course leads us to death, taxes, and Rollins beats Reigns. Of course, Seth Rollins beat Triple H in Orlando. That win looks better on paper than it did for 20 of the 25 minutes that night. Then, of course, in New Orleans last year, he beats The Miz and Finn Balor to win the Intercontinental Championship. So the path for Seth Rollins to beat Brock Lesnar is certainly there. And if Seth does beat Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, he'll become the first member of the Shield to pin or tap out Brock Lesnar at a WrestleMania. Remember, Brock wasn't pinned in San Francisco. Brock beat Dean in Dallas, and Brock beat Roman in New Orleans. So this is setting up to be quite a nice opportunity for Seth Rollins, and I really hope that he cashes in on this and health is an issue. And if Vince is in shakeup mode, maybe this is the biggest shakeup mode move. But Seth has been the MVP of Raw for, I mean, in March, it'll be a year.
Right.
So,
yeah. And to go on your point with the record for him, 5-0, if I'm doing my math correct.
No, he lost to, Randy Orton the night he cashed in on.
Excuse me. Yeah. 31. Yeah.
31.
So, but he will always be remembered for, you know, beating Roman Reigns there to cash in there.
It's the greatest cash in history. Seth Rollins wind sprinting down.
Yeah.
Little known story, and I confirm this.
Think of a better one.
I confirm this from Seth Rollins himself. He found out that night that he was winning the championship. He found out about an hour before.
Nice.
He started down the ring, and I asked him if he was nervous. And he said he wasn't nervous. He was excited for the opportunity.
That's cool. Now, that's really cool.
But yeah, he found out during the show, which was something that was reported a bunch of different places. And I asked Seth Rollins. I had the opportunity to talk to him for a little bit. And he confirmed that that was indeed the case, is that he found out that night, an hour before, he actually cashed it in.
I was going to say, a shameless plug for Jimmy when he had the chance to sit down with Seth at the autograph session back in October. Where was it? Somerville, right?
October 21st, Somerville at the Xfinity store.
A date that will go down in infamy there. So
it took WWE a little while to get that check to me, but they finally got it to me.
Oh, good. Good. And it didn't bounce, right?
No, it'll go towards a nice holiday gift for somebody, I'm sure.
There you go. Okay. So I was going to say that, you know, Seth Rollins is 32 years old. He's got a great – he is in his prime right now. There's no hiding behind that. I'm not going to compare him to the likes of The Undertaker with the longtime undefeated streak, even though he has lost one match. But I think he could be around as long as The Undertaker is now, and that certainly sets up a legacy for Seth Rollins with that WrestleMania record there, or even of the type of Shawn Michaels being the quote-unquote Mr. WrestleMania. So there is a very good possibility where that does come to build the character and the legacy of Seth Rollins to become that guy, the one who is known for WrestleMania moments. And certainly if that match is booked for he and Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania 35, I cannot wait for them to talk about WrestleMania 31 when he cashed in. It's going to be good.
One thing that I found interesting is Dana White on TMZ said he's not sure if Brock Lesnar versus Daniel Cormier fight, if that fight will actually happen. I kind of feel like this is Vince McMahon again buying Brock Lesnar out of UFC, at least for now. It feels like this has happened a lot. And the question I have is, why does Vince keep doing this? And I don't think Vince McMahon sees anybody who has a similar resume to Brock Lesnar. Or at least I don't feel like he has anybody from that top spot. And WWE right now has a massive injury issue. So it kind of forced Vince's hand to bring Brock back, put the championship on him, and pay whatever he wants. I mean, this is a multi-billion dollar company soon. So with the injury bug of Roman Reigns and the Braun Strowman thing, which it could be real, it might not be real, we're not really sure. I don't know what AJ Styles' contract situation or if he even has a contract situation. He might not. And then Becky Lynch, we don't know how bad her concussion is. Maybe they're playing it up for storyline purposes. These are all questions, because Becky Lynch is the biggest star in WWE right now, and it's not even close.
Right.
But in Vince's mind, Brock Lesnar is the guy that he has to keep going to and go to that well. And
well, yeah.
I mean, you know what? I wonder if Brock is still a draw.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. And it's okay when you say, I wonder if he's still the draw, and I understand. But okay, by you saying that, if he's still a draw, that totally makes sense why he is not on the TLC pay-per-view, because you want to put someone away to kind of...
Well, it looks like Brock Lesnar only does stadium shows at this point.
Well, yeah, but you know what? He can do what he wants. He's earned that reputation. He's got that whole contract. He is doing Vince McMahon a favor. There was a phone call, hands down, after Roman Reigns was announced with the leukemia, or even before that, it all became public that, Brock, you're going to win in Saudi Arabia. We need you here. Handshake deal behind the scenes. That was the deal. We know that. And you can keep him off TV to, you know, kind of, for a fan, it's like, all right, where's the Universal Champion? I want to see that defended. I cannot wait for it to be defended now at the Royal Rumble. So you don't have to have him on every pay-per-view. It does piss me off, yes, but that's the beauty of Brock Lesnar there, with the name, the size, and for everything that he brings to the table. He is right now, obviously, the longest reigning Universal Champion of all time, and I think the greatest Universal Champion of all time, the very young title that it is.
Well, this is a friend of mine brought up this point, that the Universal title is just, it's legitimately just a prop. I mean, the real championship is on SmackDown. It was AJ Styles for a long time, and this Universal Championship is just a prop for somebody. And yeah, it's disappointing, it's because Kevin Owens is actually the greatest Universal Champion of all time. His week-to-week stuff was tremendous. Him and Jericho, him and his program with Seth Rollins, all good stuff. All really, really good stuff. And it's all for naught, because Goldberg beat him in 2 seconds, 3 seconds, 5 seconds, 8 seconds, whatever it was. And then Brock Lesnar has taken it. And to a degree, I've enjoyed the heavier hitting style matches for the Universal Championship. But and it's something that you can't do all the time. But I don't know. Maybe I'm just tired of Brock Lesnar. I was all set with him after he lost to Roman, and now he's back. Well, and I don't know that. I mean, fans are obviously interested because Paul Heyman's such a good talker and Brock is just so violent.
Yep.
But I don't know that anybody's really a draw outside of maybe a handful of people, and I'm not sure that Brock Lesnar is one of those.
Yeah, and it's just that pop culture and, you know, ESPN drawing attention to him for the UFC background and so forth. So I think that's where Vince sees the parlay there. But Jimmy, be careful what you wish for. You did say you wanted Twitter to explode, and if he won... And he did. You got your wish.
But you know what? Twitter didn't really explode to the degree that I thought it would.
Okay. All right.
So I expected more outrage than there was, and there really wasn't. There was just like, okay,
yeah,
we're back to this again.
Well, I'll tell you, I love Twitter, and I hate it, and I think it'd be a good thing if it did explode. End of story.
So speaking of heel terms, Mike, you have a strong opinion on somebody's heel turn?
Yes. Why don't we start with that? The one we've been talking about all week here, with a Charlotte heel turn at the Survivor Series just a week and a half ago now at this point, against Ronda Rousey. And, you know, we were talking about this possibility after the Survivor Series, Jimmy, with Charlotte, Ronda Rousey, and Becky Lynch potentially having a triple threat at the Royal Rumble. WrestleMania. I think that would be awesome. Don't get me wrong. But the more I read into this right now, and the more, again, we don't know how long Becky is out. But if I were a betting man, if Becky were to return, say, after the Royal Rumble, now I'm talking hypothetically after the Royal Rumble, then I would totally see Charlotte versus Ronda Rousey at WrestleMania 35, and Becky versus Nia Jax at WrestleMania 35, because Nia Jax is still talking trash about Becky with the fist pump, wiping off the blood from it, and you know, just really having that heel embracing that role right there. Charlotte and Ronda, people are still talking about that match. And yes, the pay-per-views, we still get the inter-brand possibilities. But I think that still is set up for a potential main event. That is, if Becky is not back by the Royal Rumble, or after the Royal Rumble. If she is back before the Royal Rumble, then I could see her fighting Nia, maybe at the Elimination Chamber, or in the Elimination Chamber they go head-to-head, or even at the in the Royal Rumble itself have a separate match. But I just see that's the possibility right now where we stand if she's not back by late January.
So let's start with Nia Jax. Nia Jax just had a terrible promo on Raw where she tried to impersonate Ronda Rousey, and it turned out to be a female version of Hulk Hogan, brother.
It really was.
It was terrible. It was absolutely terrible. And any heat that she had has been substantially put on pause. So that's one. Never let Nia Jax talk again. So that's one.
Yep.
Two is, there feels like this underswell that, at least from people that I talk to, the Nia Jax did it on purpose.
Wow.
Because she had an issue with somebody else having a higher spot, and that punch was thrown recklessly on purpose.
Yeah, okay. I mean, looking at
recklessly,
it,
on purpose doesn't make sense. That punch was thrown with intent behind it.
She could have stopped it, Jimmy.
Well, you figure somebody who's been training for as long, I mean, I know that I've seen the reel of Nia Jax mistakes in the ring, but learn to throw a working punch.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And that punch from people that I have interacted with, that punch had intent. Mm-hmm. And that's not a good sign.
Yeah.
That's not good. And now she's getting rewarded for it because people are legitimately pissed at her for it. And that's not good either. I mean, I think that she's going to end up beating Ronda Rousey for the Women's Championship at TLC.
Wow.
And then they're going to have Becky as still the SmackDown champion, because I don't know how long Becky's out. I don't know whether it's legitimate that she's out this long with a concussion, or whether they are playing it up a little bit like the Shawn Michaels thing from years ago where he got kicked in the back of the head by Owen Hart and they kept him out until the Rumble.
Right.
But I think right now, in my opinion, I think what WWE is going to do is Nia wins the Raw Women's Championship. Becky's still the SmackDown Women's Championship. And they're going to have Ronda Rousey and Charlotte Flair both in the Royal Rumble. And that's how they're going to get to the next step in that program. And then whoever wins that is going to challenge either Becky, or somehow they get the championship back on Charlotte, something like that. Yeah. But I think that you're looking at WrestleMania as individuals of Ronda versus Charlotte or Ronda versus Becky.
Okay.
That's what I think is going to happen. And also, this note from Meltzer, which I had my original notes, was, quote, the plan is to go next to Rousey versus Flair and then Rousey versus Becky Lynch, unquote. So there's also a possibility that they break from the brands only crossover on one night. And where it's a stadium show and they need something big, they do Rousey Charlotte 2 at the Royal Rumble in Phoenix. And then that can lead to Rousey versus Becky at WrestleMania if that's the option that they want to go. Although based on Twitter, you would think that the Four Horsewomen versus the Four Horsewomen are going to happen at WrestleMania. And I don't think that's going to happen. That's probably a year from now, Survivor Series or a SummerSlam match. I don't think that's WrestleMania.
Yeah, and I think that needs more of a story to be told, too, with the Four Horsewomen, because not everyone knows the whole story, and that with NXT, the history of it when they were all together. So, yeah, but it just seems like that you're right. She is being rewarded for it, and I don't know. I could see the one-on-one with Becky at Mania if she ain't back by the Royal Rumble, but I do like your theory there, too, Jimmy, where Charlotte against Ronda in the stadium. It's just that match at Survivor Series was a great tune-up for what we are going to see between them again, and I can't wait for it to happen. Even the start of this podcast here tonight, Jimmy, you know, we're doing it on a Monday night, and we were supposed to start at a certain time, and I said, Jimmy, can we just wait until after Nia Jax? And that is a credit to the female side of the show. It is the best part of WWE right now, hands down.
The women have been the best part of WWE for a long time now.
If not
a couple years, it's at least been since the summer.
And definitely for Monday Night Raw. Definitely for Raw.
So, there's a lot of stuff in this, right? One of the things that in reading through Meltzer's newsletter, and we're talking about how great that Rousey Charlotte match was at Survivor Series. Keep this in mind. You all know this. I'm a Charlotte Flair honk, right? It's clear as day.
You know, you have been for a while.
I have been. I've been since the match with Natty in NXT. That's when Charlotte first jumped on, and so on and so on. So I'm a honk for Charlotte Flair. We got it. Mm-hmm. This is what Meltzer wrote in the Wrestling Observer. Quote, Rousey versus Flair greatly overachieved. Rousey, Flair, and Dave Finley trained extensively in Southern California from November 14th to November 17th to get ready for this match. It paid off as it was easily Rousey's best single match to date. Unquote. Greatly overachieved. Really, Dave. Overachieved.
Yeah.
Charlotte Flair has had a number of excellent matches this year, and Ronda has been good in many of her feature match spots. The Bliss rematch was good storytelling back at Hell in a Cell. I'm sorry, I know they showed highlights of Nia Jax versus Ronda at Money in the Bank. I thought it was a good match. Maybe at the time I thought higher of the match than it was. The effort was there for Nikki Bella, but you know that's not Nikki and Ronda's fault that they can't follow Charlotte and Becky Lynch. Because they can't, and really nobody has been able to follow their program. So maybe Meltzer just thinks that Ronda Rousey is overrated, which, you know, could be an opinion of any. But what I would tell Dave is look a little bit closer and look at what she's done in a handful of matches over a short period of time. And the fact that they practice the match, who cares? Yeah. Why do I care that it's practiced? I'm sorry, it's not 1989 Flair versus Steamboat where they know the finish is 2 minutes long and they're going 45 or an hour and they just know the finish and they're calling it in the ring. That's not how wrestling works anymore. Right. Everything is choreographed. The wrestlers now, the superstars, sorry, I'll get my vernacular better. They have to show up at noontime for an 8 o'clock show.
Right. Right.
Because they have to do a rehearsal for the show.
Yep.
One of the great matches of its generation was Savage and Steamboat. And while they didn't do in-ring rehearsals, they had stepped out. They had the steps of their match memorized. Mm-hmm. And that's a match that I think if you watch today would live up to the test of time.
Yep.
But for the generation, WrestleMania 3 Savage Steamboat is the all-time put it against anything match.
Yeah, it's right up there, like top three.
And that was choreographed. That was a yellow legal pad with step one, lock up. Step 85, cover.
Right, right.
So who cares if it's practiced? Who cares? I don't.
Who cares? And you know what? That made the match so much better. I mean, here's Charlotte putting Ronda's head in that chair at the end there. Whacking her with the Kenbo stick during the match, high flying assault, everything Who cares? I am glad they worked together. That was great. I'm glad they worked together before because that made the match so much better, and that made it possibly the match of the year, right up there. I mean, I thought that going into the Survivor Series match of the year was Evolution, Becky, and Charlotte, but this is right up there, too.
Mike, I appreciate you saying that because, you know, and we'll do the gimmicky awards thing at the end of the year.
Yeah.
We'll do match of the year and pay-per-view a year like everybody else does because that's the audience seems to like that stuff. So that's what we'll do.
I've got no issue with them choreographing, though, to touch on that point.
Charlotte is in a Charlotte Flair honk here. Charlotte's got three match of the year's candidates.
I know you're third.
Asuka at WrestleMania New Orleans, the Becky last woman standing match, and then, you know, the Ronda one. And I would put the Asuka one as one, the Becky one as two. But I can be talked into flipping it. I could be talked into flipping it a month from now when we do that stupid year-end award show.
I mean, you got to join the crowd, Jimmy. But, you know, the other thing, too, with Ronda Rousey touching on her to say that she's overrated, here she is where you're going to talk about Charlotte Flair being match of the year candidate three times. What about Ronda Rousey right there with that match of the year candidate against Charlotte? And then how about WrestleMania with her mixed tag match? That was a great match, too. So that's two matches right there for Ronda Rousey to be match of the year candidate. What a stupid comment by Meltzer to say that about them to choreograph. You get two of the best athletes, best superstars in WWE, and you want to have them put the best performance out there. They gave the fans all they could, and I thought it was the best thing they could have done. Moron.
I just hate that Meltzer and other people think that Ronda Rousey's overrated. That's my thing.
Well, maybe we'll give him the dishonorable discharge of the year.
Please
Jimmy,
do.
Continue.
Although I do need a new dirt sheet if I'm going to get rid of Meltzer. So I've searched around for a dirt sheet. Because, of course, remember, Meltzer was on suspension for a few weeks from us. Coming up next, I'll ask Mike his opinion on a group of wrestlers and who might be all in on a new wrestling promotion.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
There are rumors flying around that Cody Rhodes, and the Young Bucks are looking to start their own wrestling promotion along with Kenny Omega and Hangman Page. So, Mike, I ask a very simple question. Can Cody, the Young Bucks, along with Kenny Omega and maybe Chris Jericho, have a successful wrestling promotion?
Can they? Sure. I mean, there's so much possibility. The following for them... they got a great following. They really do, Jimmy. And, you know, like you and I, we've had interactions with Cody Rhodes, and just off screen, he's just a nice guy. And he's really good at what he does in the ring, too. And it's amazing, the whole story, how he's kind of, you know, reinvented his career. The Young Bucks, they're just so talented. It's amazing. Jericho, we know the name. I could see it. I could totally see it with Jericho on your side, you know, I think that helps. But the only thing I fear is that they try to, you know, kind of, I'm not saying it would be the same situation as the XFL, but here's the XFL. They have all this star power with the networks and just really overhyped. I hope it doesn't go that same route there, overhyped and then egg on their face, where at the end it just didn't work out. So I think what they have to do is they have to build it up slowly. And we saw what Cody did with All In. And it sounds like there's going to be an All In part two. Piggyback on that, ride that momentum, because we have said it before and I'll say it again, and Cody has said it, to quote him, we are in a boom period right now for professional wrestling. So you got to kind of ride the hot hand while it's out there if they can do it. So can they do it? Yes. I just hope they take the correct steps and not throw too much at us at once. Baby steps always. What's the old saying there? The slow and steady wins the race.
So to me, Mike, yes, it can be successful. I think it'll start out on a level of success that's a little bit higher than what Tommy Dreamer has with his House of Hardcore. Mm-hmm. And this is based off of All In Weekend. And there's also this potential that Billy Corgan or Toby Keith could be putting their money into it. And Billy Corgan, of course, owns the NWA, which would then turn it into something a little bit bigger than an indie promotion. And longer term, this could end up on the level of a Ring of Honor or Impact Wrestling if it gets a TV deal, which, by the way, WGN is interested in. Will it challenge Vince for number one in the WWE? No, but it can be a very profitable number two promotion. And here's where this all started. There were trademarks that were filed about All Elite Wrestling, and just this is part of the reason why the Young Bucks, Kenny Omega, and Cody are moving away from the Bullet Club, because New Japan owns the Bullet Club, whereas Kenny Omega, the Young Bucks, own the name The Elite. So this has been a longer-term process getting away from the Bullet Club and getting people into The Elite and Be The Elite. And the Double or Nothing show, which you mentioned, Mike, is an idea that's kind of in pencil somewhere for Las Vegas in the second quarter of 2019.
Okay.
So maybe that's the springboard that gets them into their own promotion, because the Young Bucks and Cody don't have contracts right now. So they can legally sign with anybody they want.
Yep.
Or they can continue just taking indie dates. I bring up Chris Jericho before because he has a New Japan deal, but he has no North American contract.
Okay.
So it'll be interesting to see if these guys, if Cody, the Bucks, Jericho, and Hangman Page, and along with Kenny Omega, can turn something and make it into something more than Tommy Dreamer's House of Hardcore. And maybe they'll get to Ring of Honor's level. Maybe they'll get to Impact's level at one point. It all depends on all these factors, which they seem to have on their side. And I think one of the key points as to why All In was a success and why them being a promotion could be successful is because they're fans just like us. Mm-hmm. You mentioned interactions with Cody Rhodes. I've had great interactions with Cody Rhodes. I've had great interactions with the Young Bucks.
Yep.
They are fabulous people. They are fans just like you and I. They are engaging. And I think All In was a sign of, we don't know what you're doing, but you guys have been really good to us on a fan, on a wrestler to fan level. So we're going to be good to you, and we're going to put our faith into you and hope that it turns out to be a good product, which All In, I think, was.
And when you say this could be a number two promotion, obviously behind the WWE, I don't know, could you ever envision it kind of like, okay, Ring of Honor, I'd say, is right up there with the close
and Ring of Honor needed help from New Japan.
Exactly. So could they potentially be up to that caliber? Could they be almost as big as the WCW was when they started to have the competition in the 90s? I mean, it could happen.
I think, Mike, with the WCW comparison, is people forget that Jim Crockett Promotions and the NWA had generations of history behind it.
True.
So this is why it takes so long. Remember, Vince is third generation.
Yeah.
He's third generation Carney. So you've got what is it, 70 years of promoting?
Yeah, I mean, starting in the 1930s with his grandfather. So
you know, that's tradition, that's heritage. It's a lot of history behind it. And that's what WCW had. And then they had Hulk Hogan. and you had Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair, and then Hulk Hogan turns into a villain, and you had all the WWF fans tuning into WCW to see what the WWF stars were doing, and then it started the whole rebuild and da 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 da.
Yeah. So, I mean, it could happen, but it would take a long time.
Definitely. I just want you to know I'm rooting for them to be successful at this because, as I've said, they're good people. Or at least they've been good to us, and that's all I can do to judge
them. And I think a very important piece of that whole thing is that when you get a TV deal, that is gold. You get a strike at it.
And if WGN is really interested, then they've got a chance. They've got a good chance at being successful.
Absolutely. There you go.
So WWE over the weekend did Starrcade, which they put in a condensed version on the WWE Network on Sunday night. It was a 1 hour special. They didn't put all the Starrcade matches on it. They put a handful of stuff, promos, AJ Styles and Samoa Joe in a steel cage match, which was really good, but it should have been for the championship. Bray Wyatt made a return on Starrcade, which this did not air on the network special. But Mike, you have an opinion on Bray Wyatt's return.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I just totally forgot he was on the roster until I saw that he did return at Starrcade there. And I'll touch on Starrcade in just a moment here.
Oh, but I've got a strong opinion on Starrcade. Don't you worry about that.
All right. So it's like this is – and I love the Bray Wyatt character from where he was, you know, at – that time there, like when he was with the Wyatt family, and it was really good. But then over time, it just got killed. And I thought what he did with Matt Hardy was great. But unfortunately, it was very short lived. So it's good to see him back and to kind of have that, you know, a rebirth here to see if something is in the works for him because he got a huge pop. The crowd did enjoy when he was out there when his music hit. So I could really see Bray Wyatt have a good push for the Intercontinental Championship. He's just that kind of guy that does he need a title? No, but you know, I think he'd be a good guy to have maybe like a Bobby Roode reach for him for the Intercontinental title, a guy who really needs a championship in my opinion. Maybe even have Finn Balor go after him or even
I think
Dolph
we've
Ziggler.
Seen enough of Finn Balor versus Bray Wyatt.
Well, I mean, you know what? But you put a championship on the line, it's a different story. Just have that little bit of a draw there, or a Dolph Ziggler, something.
Just let me see Bray Wyatt drop worms out of the sky on Finn Balor live again. I need that in my life.
Yeah, I'm sure you do.
Because remember that happened in Boston.
Yes, it did.
Where they just dropped like brains or something on Finn Balor.
It was bizarre. So I could see him having a good push for the Intercontinental Championship again when he's ready to get back out there. But Starrcade, Jimmy, here's a show that has so much pride, and it's essentially being treated as a house show. Wouldn't you want to make that a pay-per-view?
So, yes, and they should have done it last year. They should have started it with the show in the Carolinas, which was a great show because I actually watched it on somebody's Periscope. Mm-hmm. Because that's how much of a wrestling nerd I am.
Okay.
So the Starrcade special is a step in the right direction, and I think you saw a little bit of it when we were at the show in Boston. We saw that they were shooting it, and I think this is all part of a practice run to see if they have an audience for house shows, live events as they're called now, because I think what's going to happen is the WWE Network is going to become tiered soon. So additional content like house shows is going to cost. So the network right now is $10.
Yep.
So if you want access to everything, it's going to be like $20 a month,
which, by the way,
I'm in for. Yeah. But if you just want pay-per-views, then it's $10 a month. Or if you just want archive stuff, then it's $10 a month. I don't think they've figured out how it's going to be tiered yet. But I think the tiering is coming for the WWE Network.
Wow. Okay.
But
in 2019.
Yeah, I think it's coming soon. It will probably come after WrestleMania in New York because they don't want to disrupt the WrestleMania network subscription number.
They want
that as high as possible because the investor call is the end of April, I think.
Okay. Yeah.
So they got to make sure that that number is good. Mm-hmm. But once you hit to May and the summer months, you might see the tiered, and then they'll go back to free trials, and they do all these things to manipulate numbers. Or it could be that it fails. Remember, initially when you signed up for the network, it was for 6 months.
Right, exactly.
And then they had to back off of that.
Right, right.
So, but why I was hot about Starrcade and why I had issues with Starrcade, and I start with another disclaimer. I love Brian Danielson. I love Daniel Bryan. He was one of my longtime favorite performers dating back to his Ring of Honor days.
Yeah.
But I miss the criticism for him not working Starrcade or any of the weekend house shows. He worked our house show in Boston in October, but all I see is, why doesn't Brock Lesnar defend his championship more often? So Daniel Bryan didn't show up at the house shows, so we're just going to give him a pass?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what we're going to do?
Yeah,
are we interested in fighting champions or not? Because all I heard while Brock Lesnar was the champion was, he doesn't defend the title enough. Why isn't he on Raw every week? Well, so Roman Reigns won the championship. You know how many times he defended the championship on TV or pay-per-view?
After SummerSlam, you're talking about, right?
After he beats Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam. How many times did Roman Reigns defend the Universal Championship?
Was it twice?
It was twice. Finn Balor the night after and Braun Strowman at Hell in a Cell. Now, unfortunately, he got sick, which that's not his fault.
Right.
And maybe it's because they were booing him and you didn't want him booed. Mm-hmm. So you put him in six-man matches because you're not going to boo the entire Shield.
Yeah. No.
So now Roman's not a fighting champion.
No.
So now you have the WWE Championship, which AJ Styles was the champion for 371 days. I think that's the number.
Didn't break the record.
He defended it with a torn hamstring in Japan.
Yeah.
So now you have it on Daniel Bryan, which from a character standpoint is tremendous. Like, villain Daniel Bryan, all in for. But is he going to defend the championship or not?
Put it on the line. If you're the champion, you should be defending it every show. Hands down. I'm old-fashioned like that. Yes. Why does he get a pass? We don't know. It's wrong. It's not right, Jimmy. It's garbage. It's not good for the product, and it's not good for the fans. Should be defended every show. Period.
Well, every show's a little strong, but more than twice.
At least pay-per-view. But when you have a show like that for Starrcade, that should be on the line. A name like Starrcade.
So, like, the Intercontinental Championship, I think, should be defended every week. The U.S. Championship, I think, should be defended every week. Or you create a television championship.
Yep.
But as far as the WWE Championship and the Universal, at least every pay-per-view, and it should be on the line in house shows. It should be.
Without question.
And we know that they're not going to change hands on a house show, although every once in a while a title switch on a house show would be good.
Yeah,
but
it'd be awesome.
I need my champions in the ring.
Yes, you do.
I need them in the ring.
That's the point of it, right?
And especially Daniel Bryan, who's a workhorse, and I know he's coming back from his own issues, but he wanted to be in the ring, so now we're going to grind you.
Yeah. That's it.
So you're going to be the champion? Are you going to be a fighting champion, or you're not going to be a fighting champion? I would just like to see one person on the internet actually criticize the fact that he hasn't defended his championship.
I haven't seen it yet. Have you?
No.
We're waiting. Be the first to tweet at us, right?
So, Mike, I think you have a few quick notes about Raw being villain heavy and something on Alex Riley before we wrap up.
I can't think of any real serious babyface. I mean, maybe Seth Rollins. He might be the number one babyface on Monday Night Raw. Ronda Rousey, I guess, too, for that matter. But it's very heel heavy. I mean, Elias has become kind of a face, but everything else, a lot of heels, Jimmy. Can you think of any real serious babyface for Monday Night Raw? I can't.
Well, Finn Balor's the number one. Finn Balor's the number two babyface on Raw, even if Vince McMahon doesn't think that.
Okay. All right. But I mean,
Braun Strowman, but he's hurt.
Yeah, he's hurt. Yeah. So,
but I think if you're going through the list of good guys and bad guys, your top good guys are Braun Strowman, Seth Rollins, Finn Balor. But I would say Seth Rollins is one, Braun is 2, Balor is 3, as far as the men's side. On the women's side, it's Ronda's 1, and then it's Sasha and Bayley. But I think that Sasha and Bayley are way, there's like a big gap underneath Ronda. And there shouldn't be, because again, Sasha and Bayley are being underutilized, blah, 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 blah. You've heard this rant in the archives of our podcast.
Yep. Told you all about it. It just seems like it's very outnumbered right now. And, you know, the Dean Ambrose, Seth Rollins, that match at TLC, I'm looking forward to that. Those two work really well together. And the whole story of the turn there with their history at the Shield. But it just seems like we need a couple more baby faces, in my opinion. I don't think Bobby Roode's going to do it for me if he ever is considered to be one. Elias, I think, works better as a heel. But, you know, I don't know. I think they have so much talent out there that's being underutilized in that sense.
Mike, for this the goes to face. The bigger. This goes to the bigger point about the company, character development.
Yeah,
they lack character development. That's the bigger point about this company.
They push a lot too early, too soon.
They're thin. There's no consistency. It's Vince McMahon basically saying, "Well, pal, I don't know that they remember anything." No, we remember everything, Vince. We do.
Right.
We're wrestling fans. We're hardcore. We remember storyline synergy. We just do. We do.
Exactly. That's
so
it.
What's your note on Alex Riley?
So Alex Riley, if you remember, he was with The Miz. He was a little sidekick there for a while. Apparently, this just came out on his Instagram and on YouTube just as recently as the other day that Alex Riley plans to come out with a big story against John Cena. And he and Cena had some heat backstage, apparently. And according to Riley, no relation, by the way, too. He does spell it the right way. That Cena buried his career. And in a way, I mean, what did Alex Riley ever do? What did he ever do in the ring? I mean, did John Cena have something to do with that? The fact that he never got that push or the next step there. So I'm kind of curious to see what's going to happen here, if he's going to come out with a book or even, I don't know, some sort of an article or whatever, have someone write it on John Cena, what happened between the two, and just try to get after him. Because it doesn't sound pretty good here. And in the end, it does sound bitter, though. But something definitely happened backstage. No hiding behind that.
Yeah, Vince McMahon decided Alex Riley sucked and cut him.
You're right about that. But did John Cena have something to do with this here, with the call on that with Alex Riley? But it just kind of caught my attention because I'm a John Cena guy. And you know what? I don't like when a guy like he gets the heat from someone who is no longer in the company. So I'm just kind of curious to see what's going to happen here.
So I'm interested in the Alex Riley thing, but Alex Riley should blame the person who signs his checks. Now, as somebody who works a lot with talent, talent makes certain suggestions to decision makers. That happens a lot in any industry. So if John Cena didn't like something Alex Riley did, he has a right to complain to his boss. But at the end of the day, Vince McMahon is the one who says somebody is hired or fired.
Of course.
So, yes, of course, he can be influenced by that. But at the end of the day, Alex Riley should blame Vince McMahon. Or, here's an idea, Alex. Get over. And then you don't have to worry about it.
This is true.
You look at... So John Cena has this track record of feud with Cena, then the character dies off somewhere, right? We've seen it a number of times where Bray Wyatt, we were talking about Bray Wyatt earlier. So John Cena should have lost to Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania in New Orleans. We all agree on that?
Oh, yeah.
But Vince McMahon didn't want to see John Cena lose at WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
So, but somehow we blame John Cena for not losing to Bray Wyatt. So is John Cena supposed to just change the finish on the biggest pay-per-view of that year?
Right.
Is that what is supposed to happen?
Can't do it.
Because if you also look at John Cena's track record of the people that he's put over, he put over Edge in Boston, actually. in Boston. And of course, John Cena wins in Toronto, which was part of the story. But John Cena walked into ECW One Night Stand and lost the championship to Rob Van Dam.
Yeah. I mean,
and what happened to Rob Van Dam? He got caught with pot and they had to take both championships off him. How is that John Cena's fault? It's not.
No.
Look, he put over Kevin Owens. He put over AJ Styles when he came in. You know, I know Punk was getting hot at that time, but
he put over CM Punk in Chicago. And instead of keeping CM Punk off TV, which is what they should have done, they made the decision to bring him back 2 weeks later. And you know what happened after that? John Cena put over CM Punk again at SummerSlam. And then here comes Alberto Del Rio with the cash in. And now CM Punk stuck in a program with Triple H, which Triple H beat CM Punk. And they tried to kill him off that way. And then he's in a program with Alberto Del Rio. And eventually Punk gets the championship back and holds it for 434 days. And is an undercurrent for the John Cena Rock program, which, again,
isn't John Cena's fault. It's Vince McMahon's fault.
Right.
I'm doing that talking into the mic thing.
Well, I'm going to tell you right now. Say what you want. Say what you want here, but the more we're talking about this, John Cena, I think essentially, he put The Undertaker over this past WrestleMania.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The Undertaker beat him in 3 minutes.
Yeah, he put him over. So there you go. He's that kind of guy. So whatever Alex Riley, this bitterness is here, like you said, Jimmy, to put yourself over wouldn't be a problem. I just want to see what this guy's going to say. It's kind of like a Twitter troll. You don't pay attention to him. That's what it seems like it is. But I want to see what he's going to say, though. I'm curious.
Each week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 98.5thesportshub.com and on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. All of our podcasts are also available in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. For Mike Riley at Sarge985, our Twitter account is at WrestleCast985. You can follow me on Twitter at IamJamesStewart. We'll talk to the people next week, Mike.
Jimmy, if I can just end with a Bobby the Brain Heenan quote, please.
Sure.
25 years ago, he called his final pay-per-view in the WWF. It was Survivor Series 93 at the old Boston Garden. Bobby the Brain Heenan. Now remember this, when a man sticks his hand out to you, you shake it, and then kick him really hard when he's not looking.
Mike, you're a friend in need. You're a pest.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.